It's Good Friday, the day that everything changed, the very center of the Christian faith. On the cross, the sacrifice that paid for the sins of the world, that paid for my sin and yours. On the cross, held not so much by the nails driven through his hands, but by his love for us. And we stop to remember, together, though on this Good Friday, kept apart by the brokenness that he came to restore to wholeness. Together in spirit, as his church, though physically separated and isolated. This perhaps giving us a new taste and feel for the separation and isolation that Christ himself must have felt, part of his sacrificial love for us and for the world. Separated and isolated, even from his Father, so that we, broken humanity, might be rejoined to our Father, to be set right with him, to be made righteous, not by our merit, but by his sacrifice. It's Good Friday, and we will take time to remember. We will do this by hearing the words that Jesus spoke from the cross as he hung suspended between heaven and earth, despised by men and rejected by God. Though sinless, condemned to die in our place so that we might live. We will hear and consider the things that Jesus said in his final hours. Seven utterances summed up by seven words. Seven words from the cross. I invite you now to enter into the story, his story, that has become our story at his invitation to us and to all who are burdened and who are looking to be restored. The greatest story ever told. Hear again the story of Good Friday through the very words of Christ. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Jesus spoke these words at the height of his suffering. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Who was Jesus referring to when he spoke these words? Was he speaking of the ones now standing at the foot of the cross, casting lots for the clothes that he had been wearing before being nailed to the cross? Or did his prayer for forgiveness go out for the people who stood watching, reveling at the death of those condemned? He, Jesus, and the two criminals who hung at his right and left. Could Jesus have said a prayer for the very religious rulers now sneering at him? He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ, the chosen one. Or was Jesus thinking of Judas, who betrayed him? Or Peter, who denied him? Was Jesus thinking of those who had accused him falsely, those who had mocked him and jeered at him as he carried the cross through the streets of Jerusalem? Or those guilty by keeping silent? The point is, Jesus prayed a prayer of forgiveness. Father, forgive them, he said. The Greek word literally means to let it go. Jesus asked his Father, the Almighty, the All-Powerful, Judge of all the universe, to disregard their sin and their shortcoming. Not to disregard their sin and brokenness so much because it needed to be dealt with. No, but to take their sin and set it on himself, so that he could Deal with it once and for all. Father, forgive them, he said, for they do not know what they are doing. What Jesus did paid for our sin and set us free. Our sin let go by the words of Jesus, leaving us to start again. Father, forgive them. Are there people in your life that you need to forgive? Things that have happened that you need to leave behind? Memories that you should let go of? If Jesus could find it in his heart to forgive, can you find it in your heart to forgive? Don't let his words stand in isolation. I tell you the truth. Today, you will be with me in paradise. Jesus was hung between two criminals, one on his left and another on his right. Above his head hung a crudely written sign. It read, "This is the King of the Jews." These words intended to mock him. Oh, the indignity of hanging between two convicted felons on a hill of execution called Golgotha. One of the criminals crucified with him, hardened of heart, hurled insults at Jesus with the crowds who were gathered there to make a spectacle of those convicted and dying. He jeered at Jesus. "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." The criminal on the other side, however, quieted the first criminal and then appealed to Jesus. "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And those words of appeal, spoken in sincerity and in desperation, were heard by Jesus. Though it pained him to speak, every movement Jesus made, straining at the nails in his hand, and the breath of air he inhaled to speak caused further strain on his chest cavity. But he wanted to answer the criminal's final plea. And the words Jesus spoke were words of salvation. "I tell you the truth," Jesus answered the criminal, the one rightly convicted for his crime. "Today, you will be with me in paradise." In this story, and in these words, we take a step beyond forgiveness into salvation. Not only were his sins set aside, but the man guilty and rightly condemned gained life even after his dying breaths. And in his dying, Jesus kept true to his mission to serve. It was Jesus who had said to his disciples at the beginning of his ministry on earth, "I have not come to be served, but to serve, and to give my life as a ransom for many." And now, to this one man, Jesus, at the end of his own life and in his own pain, he reaches out to offer salvation, to serve once again, and to serve to the very end. Now think, is there someone you need to continue to pray for? Jesus' words to the criminal on the cross teaches us that no matter what and how far we travel down the road of sin, it is never too late for salvation to come. It reminds us not to give up praying for someone or some situation. God's arm is not too short to save. His reach goes far, all the way. all the way, in fact, to the cross. Maybe you, as a Christian, have strayed and failed often. Too often, you think, as you struggle with repeated sin or addiction, judged by others, by everyone, including yourself. Jesus' words to the criminal on the cross, "I tell you the truth today," are words that echo into today. As we remember his sacrifice, determined by his love for us, to show us that it is never too late. No matter who you are or what you have done, Jesus will always accept a sincere and repentant heart. Dear woman, here is your son. With these words, we get a glimpse at the heart of Jesus. A heart moved with compassion. To his mother, in the midst of his pain, he speaks words of tenderness. Dear woman, here is your son. And these words, followed by words to John, a beloved disciple, "Here is your mother." There is no greater pain than watching pain in your child. The pain of burying a child. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Testimony to a broken world. A world created good that has gone wrong. And at the point of his own suffering, Jesus reaches out to someone else who is suffering, his mother, and a loved disciple at her side. And he shows them his tender heart. His heart aches for their pain and their sorrow. He does not allow his own pain and suffering to minimize or discount their pain and suffering. Jesus sees their brokenness. He sees their brokenness, their hurt and their fear. And as his heart aches, it reaches out to them, and he strains once more to speak, to help allay their fears and still their pain. Dear woman, here is your son. And then to his disciple, here is your mother. He says this to them. He says, you need to see each other, to help each other, to support one another. Because in doing that, in speaking these words, Jesus speaks also to us. For all of us to realize that suffering in your life, significant pain, does not have to mean that you become unable to reach out to care for others. His words of compassion, spoken tenderly to his mother and the disciple, set for us an example. It teaches us to reach beyond our wounds and our woundedness. Who is God placing around you for you to reach with your words of hope? Jesus spoke out in pain, in his pain. Will you speak out in yours? Will you share your pain to become a wounded healer? my God, why have you forsaken me? There, on the cross, Jesus cries out to God, the Son of God, himself fully God, yet also human. He cries out in pain, the pain of isolation. He could have called 10,000 angels to destroy the world and to set himself free. He could have called 10,000 angels. But he died alone for you and me. Here on the cross, Jesus chooses the anguish of desolation rather than call on the power of God, fully his and fully within reach. Theologians talk about the two natures of Christ, joined in hypostatic union, fully God and fully human all at once. Somehow an incomprehensible truth, allowing Jesus to cry out from his humanity while saving that very humanity from his divinity. We cannot presume to understand, to know the mind of God, to explain the mystery of anguish experienced by the Almighty and perfect God. We cannot presume to understand the agony of the cross. But what we can do, what we can tap into, what we should not fail to grasp in seeing Jesus in the moment of anguish, in his crying out. Jesus cries out in anguish and questions God. He doesn't silence his being, and he doesn't strangle his soul. But he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? It runs contradictory to what we teach our children about silencing their tears. It runs counter to our own tendencies to bear up under pressure and suffering, to suck it in. It seems offensive almost to address the God of the universe with our cries and our questions. Yet this is what Jesus does. He cries out in pain. He calls out to God for him to know, for him to hear. And here he does. Though silent, and in his silence, God is present. He hears the cries of his people. He hears the cries of his son. Because silence is not absence. Do not mistake his silence for absence. Please do not make that mistake. Jesus claims in his cries of anguish, he acclaims God as my God. Jesus knows our pain. He knows our every weakness. He knows the feeling of abandonment, of anguish. And he cries out. Cries of agony with us, soon to be transformed into prayers of intercession for us. To hear us when we cry out in our anguish. Be sure of this. Jesus knows our every weakness, and he hears our every cry. I am thirsty. These words again, so very human. Thirst, mumbled through the cracked lips of a dying man. The suffering of the Son of God, who in his dying experienced all the struggles of an ordinary man. Suspended between heaven and earth, Jesus looks for consolation. He asks for someone to answer his need. Anyone. For someone to reach out, to see his condition, his wretched condition. Thirst, at the time of dying, is a normal physiological condition. The body's physical need for water, a dry mouth, and a parched throat. But theologians see in Jesus' request to still his thirst the fulfillment of prophecy. Psalm 69, verse 21, had said, they put hyssop in my food and gave me vinegar for my thirst. Jesus' request fulfills what was predicted long ago. Evidence for a larger plan at work, the hand of God moving history to accomplish his end. Not the plans of men were to succeed, but God's far reach into time to secure eternity for the ones that he loves. Still others see in the words of Jesus his expression of longing for God, for him to be reunited with the Godhead, a thirst for God. And in this final hour, as he clings to life, the desire to fulfill his Father's calling for him. Jesus thirsts to be obedient to the purpose of his life, his ministry, and his God. So that in all, life and death, God's purposes may be fulfilled and his glory may be lifted. My question to you is, do you thirst for God? Are your lips primed to praise him? Do you yearn, like Jesus on the cross, for God? His death, his desire for you and I, the wellspring of life. Let Jesus' thirst for God quench your thirst. Jesus is the living water, who says, let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them. It is finished. Shortly after his lips were sponged with vinegar, all that needed to be done was done. The Gospels are filled with descriptions of dramatic healings that Jesus performed. The profound parables spoken by him, showing him to both confront the religiously righteous and to embrace those with great needs. And now, here, at the end, it records the death of Jesus exceedingly briefly. When he had received the drink, rather, Jesus said, it is finished. And with that, the Bible records, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. These words, it is finished, proclaim that he accomplished the work that he had set out to do. That he had set out to do. That God had given him to do. Too often, I think, we make the mistake of falling back into seeing Christ's death as something done to him. Sinful and evil men controlling his destiny. God sending him to his death. We forget then that it was his love that chose this sacrifice for us, for you and for me, to deal with sin, our sin, and overcome both death and hell. Too often we forget that in the death of Jesus lies victory. And his words, "It is finished," it signals to the world that the work of forgiveness and salvation has been accomplished. It is finished. No more sin to weigh us down. No more death to snuff out the reality of eternity. No more hell to keep us from the glorious presence of God. "It is finished," says Jesus. And in these words of Jesus, nailed to that cruel cross, abandoned on the hill of the skull, he gains for humanity, all those who stood condemned, a victory that gives birth to hope. But today, on this day, Good Friday, these words also mark the end of the embodiment of love. Love nailed to the cross. And with each stab of those nails piercing the hands and feet of Jesus, we hear the echo of victory. "It is finished," Jesus said. "His work done." Shutting down our need for striving. No more let sin and shame rule your life. But in his death, find your victory. He died for you and for me. Are you living your life with purpose? Or are you simply meandering about? I pray, let his death mean something. He gave his life for you. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. The final words of Jesus, the very last words that he uttered from the cross after his declaration of victory, were words of trust. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. In these final words, Jesus, on this dark, dark Friday, where death engulfed the very Son of God, these words hint at something more. And it is these words that allows us to call this Good Friday. How could anything so awful and so dark and so final possibly be called good? But it is in these final words of Christ, in all his humanity, that he gives us a recognition of something beyond. Beyond the darkness that we are now in. The darkness of Golgotha. The darkness of death. With these final words, Jesus draws even closer to God. In this final difficult time, he steps into the very heart of God. It is a final step of trust, a last release of control. "Here I am, Father. I am yours." Jesus does not step away from his Father, but he steps into his embrace. In his darkest hour, in his greatest pain, when all seems lost and dark, and silent, Jesus surrenders fully into what seems only dark and darkness. "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Is there anything that you need to entrust into his care? in darkness and in every day. God is always the safest place to be.